It's the State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward in for Kate Archer-Kent. PFAS have been making headlines for months in Wisconsin and beyond, but what exactly are they? The Agency for Toxic Substances and Disease Registry explains PFAS this way: as man-made chemicals that have been used in consumer products and industry since the 40s. For years, PFAS were used to make nonstick cookware, stain-resistant fabrics and carpets, firefighting foams, lots of other products that resist grease, water, and oil. But they don't break down in nature. And emerging research suggests significant health effects from exposure to PFAS, which can build up in the human body over time. So in Wisconsin, lawmakers are continuing their debate on how best to deal with the issue. So what would you like to know? You can call us, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. We have two members of the PFAS Project Lab out of Northeastern University. The lab studies the social, scientific, and political factors of PFAS on a national level. Phil Brown is the co-director of the lab, directs the Social Science Environmental Health Research Institute. Phil, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi there.
Kimberly Garrett is also a member and environmental health scientist and toxicologist. Kimberly, welcome to you as well.
Thank you.
Last month, Wisconsin Republicans crafted a bill that would address PFAS contamination. So during public hearings this month, the bill drew some support, some opposition in both the state assembly and the state senate. Phil, what's your reaction to this legislation?
Well, we've been following a lot of legislation for a number of years, and I have to say this is the oddest one. Most of the legislation these days is banning one or more uses of PFAS, putting out health advisories, putting out regulatory limits, which we call maximum contaminant levels. And this bill is simply putting forth some money to test water and to provide some remediation. So it's the most limited bill that we have seen. And especially at a time when states are being much more aggressive in banning and regulating many types of PFAS.
Then the Washington Post reports that 24 states are actively banning or restricting PFAS. How urgent is the need to address this across the country? Kimberly, I'll go to you on this.
Great. So it's a really, really urgent environmental issue. PFAS chemicals last a really long time in the environment, and they can bioaccumulate. And up until this point, they've been allowed to be released into the environment with very little regulation. And so this is quite an urgent issue.
We're talking about proposals by Republican lawmakers on cleaning up PFAS contamination in Wisconsin. We got some perspective from the PFAS Project Lab out of Northeastern University. We have Phil Brown and Kimberly Garrett with us. Kimberly, Wisconsin's latest bill would limit the authority of the State Department of Natural Resources to test for PFAS and require remediation. How significant are state agencies, what their role in combating PFAS across the country?
Well, so far, without sweeping federal regulation, like the contamination level or the maximum contaminant levels proposed by EPA, testing and remediation has been left up to states. And so state agencies have been really essential in our start to fight PFAS contamination. And this bill really seems to limit Wisconsin's state agency with limitations that are far more restrictive than any other bill that we've seen.
And Kim, what do you think is behind that? I mean, why are we seeing that here in Wisconsin, that kind of resistance to testing?
I imagine that it's a lot of pressure from private property owners, perhaps industry, because we know that industrial facilities account for a large portion of PFAS contamination, and there's a lot of resistance to having that made public.
So, Phil, what's your reaction to limiting the Department of Natural Resources' ability to test and require remediation?
I think it's a terrible thing. Here in Massachusetts, where I live and I work, we've seen our state agency, the Department of Environmental Protection, do so much. We were one of the first states to regulate PFAS chemicals. When EPA was testing medium and large-sized water systems, our state agency went in there and said, you know, we're going to test smaller systems too because we think they might have contamination. They also did a whole project on testing private drinking wells, which is not anything that's tested by EPA, and there are never any regulations on private wells. So a state agency can really have a lot of authority and a lot of initiative to do very good things. And it's been very helpful here. It's been very helpful in other states as well.
Kimberly, the EPA hasn't come down with a federal limit. When do you think that's going to happen, and what do you think that limit will be?
So they say that they're coming down at the end of the year, and we saw last year that they released near zero proposed limits, but then they walked that back a little bit due to available technology and our capacity to filter PFAS out of water. But I hope by the end of the year, and I believe it's 4 parts per trillion. Is that correct? I don't have my notes
That's okay.
out, but I think that's.
Phil, what do you think about the EPA coming down with a national limit? Do you think that will take some of the argument away from, there are people who think that this is all unnecessary. So, I mean, will that just kind of even the playing field for states?
Well, obviously, when EPA finalizes these regulations, that will be a very important thing, and it will keep states from having higher levels. So right now, you have states that do have higher levels, and it's a benefit to them because they don't have to go out and do all of the research and do all the hearings and go through all of the work and also deal with industry suits sometimes against them when they produce these MCLs. So yes, it would be very helpful. But that doesn't mean that state agencies still won't have roles because the states can still do a lot of other testing. As I mentioned before, private drinking wells, they can put large amounts of money in for remediation processes. They can continue to do research that will include more of the PFAS compounds in because right now there's a limited number, only six that are being proposed for regulation. And there's no state that has more than six. Some states have two or three, some have four or five, but very few have even as many as six. So yes, this will be a very big benefit that will help the states, many of whom don't have enough staff and laboratory facilities to do the kind of research that is needed to put forth MCLs or any other kind of regulations.
Phil, the Wisconsin bill would provide grants to help municipalities test for PFAS and pay for related infrastructure upgrades for remediation, but doesn't include funding for other programs like, well, I don't know. I mean, what are other some of the other states doing to help support municipalities financially with this?
Well, that part is what's good that they are providing that. Our bill that we're seeing in Massachusetts that we've just testified, both Kimberly and I testified, along with a number of other colleagues just last week, includes many regulations, many bans on a dozen uses of PFAS in rugs and carpets and food packaging, as well as providing a lot of funding. But to provide funding alone is just not sufficient. And some of the amounts we saw in there are very low, and they don't strike me as being feasible to help communities do this work.
So if money isn't enough, what more besides money do they need to do, Phil?
Well, there are 23 states where the attorneys general have filed suit asking that the court find the companies liable for this. So this is what we call make the polluter pay. That's an important thing to do. I think the state should be able to sign on to that and do things of that sort. There's a national suit that's been consolidated in South Carolina around firefighting foam, AFFF. So there are things that can be done to make the manufacturers and the remanufacturers, the ones who use PFAS chemicals, like in the production of non-stick cookware or stain-resistant fabrics. All of these people knew the risks, they knew the hazards, they knew the liabilities, and they still went ahead and did it. So, making the polluters pay for these multi-billion dollar cleanups and remediation is very important.
Kimberly, building on what Phil said, thinking about how polluters are held accountable, how difficult is it to hold polluters accountable, especially if you have, let's say you have a manufacturing community and you have, three or four manufacturers. How do you identify which company is responsible for that?
Well, up until this point, it's been very, very difficult. We have historic success cases like Parkersville, West Virginia, Parkersburg, West Virginia, sorry, was one of the first lawsuits brought against a PFAS manufacturer by an impacted community. And since then, we've only seen the number of lawsuits increase, including some by states this year. It can be very difficult because companies are allowed to keep their formulas secret as confidential business information. And as there are currently over 14,000 chemicals that could be considered PFAS and not necessarily all in use, but there is a wide variety and it can be kind of difficult to fingerprint what blends of PFAS are used and where they end up in the environment.
And the proposed bill would focus on remediation of PFAS. How should state lawmakers balance cleaning up and banning its future use? Phil, I'll go to you.
Well, with any kind of toxic chemical, you always want to cut it off at the faucet. So you want to go as far upstream as you can and stop it from happening, because otherwise the amazingly large number of uses of PFAS that we're finding out more and more about every day are just inundating us. And until we stop that, we won't be able to keep them out of the environment and out of people's bodies. Day by day, we see PFAS found in plastics and pesticides. We're finding them in personal care products, in pharmaceuticals, in medical devices. We're finding them in artificial turf. And it's almost like every week you see another major study that shows how broad PFAS are throughout the environment. So you've got to cut it off. That's why the bills to ban the use of chemicals is so important, because that stops it at the source.
We have Kimberly Garrett and Phil Brown here with us today from the PFAS Project Lab out of Northeastern University. This is the State Capitol Report. Call in 800-642-1234. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. State Capitol Report on The Morning Show. I'm Shereen Seward, continuing our discussion on PFAS remediation and regulation in Wisconsin. Call in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have scientists Bill Brown and Kimberly Garrett with us. They are members of the PFAS Project Lab out of Northeastern University. The lab studies the social, scientific, and political factors of PFAS on a national level. They both stay with us. Jane is on the phone with us from Suwamish with a question. Hello, Jane. Thanks for calling.
Oh, thanks for taking my call. I have two things I'd like to have them talk about. One is PFAS is being found now in the Bay of Green Bay, and Green Bay has the largest freshwater estuary in the world, and there are grants being assigned to it to study it and protect it. And I'm wondering if they know anything about PFAS being monitored there and what might happen there. And then the other part is the state of Wisconsin is very rural, so we have many private wells instead of wastewater treatment facilities for municipalities. And I understand that deep drilling is being used to give people fresh or clean water, non-contaminated water, but that is causing a drawdown into the earth of the higher level contaminated PFAS water.
Okay. All right. Two-part question then. Thank you, Jane, so much. Phil, do you know anything about the Green Bay situation with the contamination there, or is that something that's not on your radar?
This is something we've heard about, but we're not expert on that. There are people who really do specialize a lot in PFAS and fish. We do know that there are a lot of places, both freshwater and saltwater, that are highly contaminated in fish with very, very high exposure. And a lot of places where there's, in fact, warnings against eating fish because of that. And similarly for other wildlife, for game. So we know that this is an issue, and more testing is obviously necessary all the time, and when necessary, fish advisories in multiple languages and also very well posted, because often you see fish advisories that are posted only in English and very sparsely distributed around a place where people are fishing. So it's not surprising that you would find it in any large freshwater area.
Okay. Jane also asked about private wells and deep drilling. Kimberly, what about those private wells and deep drilling? Is that making things worse or better?
So up until this point, as I mentioned, without federal support, private well testing has come to the responsibility of states. And so that's why state funding would be really, really important to address this issue. As for the drawdown issues, we've seen this with other environmental contaminants, and drilling deeper is a temporary solution, but it can cause issues in the surrounding environment, and is really a reminder of how connected our environmental systems are to each other and how we have to be very careful from the start. But I'm not familiar with the specifics of drawdown for PFAS chemicals.
Okay. We'll go to the phone again with Steve now from Sun Prairie. Steve is with us. Good morning.
Morning. I know the guests were talking about holding manufacturers accountable for different types of pollution and things like that. Wondering what the guests feel should be done to, let's say, the city of Milwaukee, who actively pumps raw sewage into Lake Michigan when their sanitation departments get overrun. Should people be personally, government officials, personally liable for those decisions?
That's an interesting question. Thank you, Steve. Phil, what do you think about that? Should officials be held personally liable for these decisions?
Well, we certainly saw that in Detroit with the lead contamination crisis, where the officials really knew what the problem was and covered it up. And we've seen this in a lot of other places as well. So yes, they should be held responsible. But obviously, you've got to understand that many cities and towns don't yet know the extent of the problem. So we're seeing in some states, for instance, there are requirements to test all the wastewater effluents. And there are requirements to test the sludge that's coming out of wastewater treatment plants, because that's been a very big source of PFAS, and that's wound up in a lot of the food that we eat. And we've seen large and small dairies alike in multiple states have to shut down because their cows have eaten sludge fertilized grass, and then that's wound up in the milk. So yes, the problem is a combination of responsibility for the public, officials and agencies, but also for the manufacturers. But more knowledge, more treatment, more monitoring potential for all of those sites is what we need.
We're talking
and
about
obviously it's not good to dump untreated waste into rivers. You've got to find lots of other approaches, combine sewer outflows and other approaches.
Yeah, it's an interesting situation down in Milwaukee. We're talking about PFAS contamination with the PFAS Project Lab out of Northeastern University. Phil Brown and Kimberly Garrett stay with us. When we're talking about holding manufacturers accountable, I want to mention that last week, chemical manufacturer 3M reached an agreement to pay at least $10.3 billion to settle lawsuits over contamination of U.S. public drinking water systems. This agreement involves about 300 communities, including some in Wisconsin. Not sure what the impact for Wausau is yet, but there is a Wausau plant. Phil, what's your reaction to the settlement? Is $10.3 billion enough?
It's not enough. I mean, obviously, it is a very, very large settlement. And we're going to see more settlements like this. This is not the first case that 3M has lost. And we've certainly seen it with DuPont, as Kimberly mentioned before, in the Parkersburg, West Virginia case, which was really the biggest wake-up call we saw and also spurred the judge to order a very large health study, which is the first time that we really knew with publicly accessible information how many health effects there were attributable to one specific PFAS chemical, PFOA. So, yeah, this is an important suit. All the other suits in progress, some of which are set by individuals, some of which the plaintiffs are attorneys general, some of which are individual states. more and more of this is necessary. It's not enough because these treatment plants, the filtration plants, are expensive to put up. They have a very large annual maintenance cost, and we've got to find ways to dispose of all of the toxics once they're taken out and put into whatever system, such as granular activated carbon.
Kimberly, under the latest bill, the state DNR is prohibited from requiring the testing of PFAS at abandoned or idle industrial sites. What is the relationship between PFAS and industrial sites in a nutshell?
So there are certain industries that can be closely related to PFAS use, and we can say that they are presumed to have PFAS contamination. And so without the ability to go in and actually test for that, it's very difficult to understand the full picture of PFAS contamination. And so certain industries certainly have PFAS contamination, specifically through historic use, before we had any kind of regulation against their release.
Lisa from Amberg called. She wants to know if we can hold companies responsible for PFAS in the same way we did with tobacco. Phil, do you think this is going to turn into something like the tobacco thing? And we only have about 30 seconds left together in our time, but I wanted to address that.
I think so. What's also interesting is the corporations have been using some of the same public relations firms that did the tobacco work. And they're, you know, trying to find ways to keep this from happening. But yes, I mean, the example before I gave of the consolidated suit in South Carolina, this is an example where you're going to have very large national level cases with huge amounts then being distributed to states to do the work, usually as they see fit.
All
but
right.
I think it's going
to I'm
be
so
similar.
Sorry I have to cut you off there. We've got to go. But thank you so much for joining us. This has been fascinating, and I'm sorry we couldn't get to all the calls. Phil Brown and Kimberly Garrett, our guests today. This is the State Capitol Report. I'm Shereen Seward. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.